Welcome to our show. Hey, you want to join us on the journey and take it to the hole for two and finger roll with us? It's 718-664-9098. Please send us your emails at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. And check out our website. We got poll questions. We got mock drafts, some NFL, NBA standings information, a lot of tidbits, our favorite teams. You can sort of check out our fandom, and that's RAEANDTAYTODAY.com, RayandTayToday.com. And also tweet at us and Facebook us, like us, follow us at Twitter. We keep it interactive. You know, Ray always tells you, we like to talk to y'all. We're all about talking sports with friends. So, Ray, what are we doing on this Friday, man? Let them know.
So we've got quite a show for you. Now, this weekend's a big weekend. We got the Daytona 500. We've got the Oscars. We've got the NFL Combine. So if you're looking for something in sports, obviously there's college basketball and NBA basketball going on. So a lot of good juicy stuff this weekend. So what we're going to do is we're going to get you ready for the weekend. So we're going to give you some quick breaking news, talk a little bit about the Oscars, and then on Monday we're going to follow up with our top five sports films. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
We'll get into these NBA trades, no major trades, about six or seven minor trades that went on right before the trade deadline yesterday. We'll get into college hoops. We still have a strong number one and number two that had tough games this week, but they both won. We've got some top 25 matchups coming up on Saturday and Sunday. Not that many, only two, but juicy games nonetheless. Then we've got the NFL Combine. So thank goodness that Time Warner and the NFL Network got together, and I have the NFL Network, so I can watch the Combine. You know it was funny when I would go to the bar and ask them to put on the Combine, and folks were like, what?
What?
The first year or two, I said, what? I said, the Combine. You know, football, the Combine.
They're like, get out of here.
Yeah,
what, are you already drunk?
The Combine and the draft, too. I had them put on the draft also, but I trained them. Anyway, so we got the Combine. We'll talk a little bit about the top 10 teams, their needs, what they're looking for, some of the top 10 prospects. There's a lot of debate this year as to who's going to go in the first round, top 10. And then we'll end our show in honor of Black History Month with the top five African-American athletes to shape the sports and athletic world in the U.S. So nice segment. I think you'll like it. But let's kick it off with breaking news. What's happening in the world of sports?
Well, speaking of what athletes and African-Americans did in society and stuff like that, there's a guy called Larry Fitzgerald, man, out here, and he's a great humanitarian. You know, he was up for the Walter Payton Man of the Year, and the top three finalists were Witten and Joe Thomas. And this is kind of, I'm sort of joking, but I'm serious in terms of, you know, the guy that Larry Fitzgerald is, right? But he's helping Jamarcus Russell. Jamarcus Russell is going to throw to Larry Fitzgerald at the Combine. And I don't know, I guess I got to check out if they're going to do it exactly at the Combine or where they're going to do it, but he's basically trying to help him get back into the NFL. So kudos to Fitzgerald for doing that, and he doesn't really have to. And let's just wish Jamarcus Russell well. I mean, we don't hate on this show. We believe in second chances on Ray and Tay and in this country, right? So let's hope Jamarcus is not sipping on syrup and my man can throw the ball and get a second chance in the NFL. So.
Well, you know he can throw the ball. He's a big, strong dude. He always had an arm. So
yeah,
let's
but
see if he can
be
have
accurate.
A second.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be in shape, right? He's got to lose a ton of weight. Wow, ton of weight. So, you know, that's it. And then, you know, like you said, we got the Daytona 500. You got any picks? Who do you think's going to pull that out, man?
You think Danica?
I got to say, I'm rooting for Danica. Why not? You know I like Jimmy Johnson, but why not? I'm going to root for Danica. You know, I'll root for her.
I'm going with my guy, the number two, second fastest qualifier, Jeff Gordon.
Yeah, Jeff Gordon.
I'm going with my guy, Jeff.
Yeah, so I think Jimmy's going to pull it out, but I'm going to
yeah,
root for
you
Danica.
Like Jimmy Johnson? Okay.
It should be fun. It should be fun. You know, and you know, by the way, also, I mean, we're going to get into this NFL stuff, but the Niners, they're still trying to shop Alex Smith. But they said that, listen, they'll take whatever they got to do if they need to salary-wise, that they could bring him back. So they're not going to give him away.
Yeah, I mean, people are stupid. They're like, oh, they should cut him. They should cut him. Why? You've got a quarterback that should start in the NFL, and you're quote-unquote only paying him $8 million, and you're paying Kaepernick like $600,000. So you've got less than $9 million tied up in two quarterbacks. Think about what the Ravens are facing, where Joe Flacco wants $20 million for one quarterback, and you've got $8.5 to $9 million tied up in two quarterbacks. So, A, they can afford to keep him and pay him $8 million, and B, if they wanted to, they could shop him and get good draft picks or get players in return. So cutting Alex Smith is not an option, and whoever says that is just completely asinine, because you've got an asset. Why would you not get value for that?
And quarterbacks
asset?
Get hurt, right? I mean, we've all seen this. These guys get hurt. So what, Alex Smith, he can't handle, you know, being a backup? You know? I think he's a professional if he's getting a paycheck, right?
Yeah, well, look, he's frustrated and he's disgruntled. All that is true. But if you're the Niners, you want to get something in return. First of all, like you said, you need two quarterbacks. Who's to say that, you know, Mo Lewis won't come out of retirement and knock, you know, knock out Kaepernick like he did Bledsoe? Well, because Mo Lewis.
I know. But where's our boy going to go? Can't wait. Bart Scott, you know. But we'll get into that when we talk about the Jets and their draft. No, you're right. And so we'll see what happens. And so Jamarcus, by the way, he's 300 pounds, and he's going to throw to Larry Fitzgerald. I believe it's going to be at the Pro Day for the LSU. Wow. That will be interesting. So, listen, I mean, what's the deal, man? Sunday's the Oscars. You know, I am a thespian. You know, I'm not currently acting anymore, but an actor, a writer. I always love the Oscars, dream to be there one day, you know, maybe with a screenplay or something. So what's the best movie this year?
Well, it's funny because they expanded the category, right? And there's nine
films.
Well,
no, they've done that for the last 4 years now.
Right. Most of the categories like actor, male, you know, actor in a lead role.
Yeah, it's just
role,
for Best Picture they expanded.
Five, but Best Picture is nine. There's nine Best
It's been like
Picture.
That the last 4 years,
and
which I think is too much.
That's too much.
But
I
guess it's their
that.
Way of trying to say we want to honor, you know, multiple films. But then people get upset, right? They're like, well, how do you nominate, let's say, Django, but then not Tarantino for director, you know, or stuff like that? So people get – you can never
the
please
nine,
anybody.
The nine is just to make more money. The nine is so that when these nominations come out and these films are in theater, they can say
exactly. It's
nominated
for the studios.
For best film – you know, it's just to make money, basically. I mean,
So what's your pick? What's your pick? Who you like him?
I got to tell you, I really enjoyed Argo. Thought it was a fantastic story, especially for people our age that lived through this. Remember how they were saying every day on the nightly news was day, you know, 129 of the hostage crisis, 130 of the hostage crisis, blah, 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 blah. But I got to think that the big over-the-top production –
Lincoln.
Steven Spielberg, Lincoln. Yeah, I got to believe Lincoln and
well,
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Between those two. I think it'll be between those two. By the way, your boy's bad. I haven't seen that much. You know, two kids, I don't get to the movies. But because I am a SAG member tonight, I have them at home. I will be watching Lincoln and Argo. So I'm ready for the Oscars.
Oh, you got a doubleheader tonight?
I'm a rock a doubleheader. Why not?
You got
Papa,
you know,
not so much.
Ready?
I'll catch a little bit of NBA, and then I'll stay up late and watch a little doubleheader.
Is T.O. coming over with his popcorn? You got your popcorn ready?
I'm going to get my popcorn ready. You know, put the young one to sleep, the older one sick, you know, and I'm going to watch me some movies. So we'll make it work. So let's talk about these trades, man. I mean, for me, number one, it wasn't that big of a deal. I think it's interesting that Garnett, you know, was recruited by Chris Paul. That's been coming out. And Paul was, you know, Garnett was sort of like, nah, homie, I'm staying in the green. I bleed green, staying with the Celtics. He didn't want to play with the Clippers, although they probably could have won a championship with Garnett. I think that would have been interesting. But the biggest deal maybe is J.J. Redick. You know, it was a 3-for-3, but maybe Redick going to Milwaukee, which is not that big, right? I mean, I guess.
That's the biggest of all the trades, though. He's going to make the most
impact. Yeah, but, you know, I think it's the night before, right? Thomas Robinson. You know, Thomas Robinson going to the Rockets, he's a number 5 pick. Now, the Sacramento, you could argue, and I thought it was sort of wrong drafting him, they already had too many power forwards. You know, they didn't need to draft him when they already had Jason Thompson, DeMarcus Cousins, they got some other big guys. So it didn't make sense to me. And he got injured early, started to play well for a minute, and then it just, you know, wasn't getting the minutes. So maybe Thomas Robinson could get some scoring, and he just sort of switches spots with Patrick Peterson. And let's see what happens with this Rocket team. I mean, they, you know, they made a couple of moves and got rid of Tony Douglas, our ex-Knick guy. So let's see if the Rockets can do something. And then what do you think about OKC, getting Ronnie Brewer from the Knicks and getting rid of Eric Maynor?
Well, look, they get a player for nothing, right? So they get a player for a second-round pick that may or may not even make the team. So they're getting a player that can help them potentially, a wing defender. You know, he defends, he's athletic. You know, he's kind of the antithesis of Kevin Martin, right? Martin's your offensive shooter, scorer, and Ronnie Brewer is your defensive guy on the perimeter. So why
right,
not,
to put
right?
Put him on Kobe.
They give up a second-round pick for him. And he'll probably be in the rotation 15 minutes a night, maybe guarding the best defender or the sixth man. If you go up against a team that's got a nice sixth man, Ronnie Brewer could defend him. And worst comes to worst, you put him down the stretch in the fourth quarter. So I like that. You know, and the
yeah.
Knicks basically traded Ronnie Brewer for a roster spot to get Kenyon Martin, and you've been calling for that all year, Kenyon Martin on a 10-day contract. So
listen,
your boy's
I think
here.
It's great. Yeah, well, listen, you know, I say this, right, because – with Wallace being hurt, Cammy being hurt, it looks like Cammy will get back before Wallace, and Wallace maybe late March, early April. I think that you need the size. Melo cannot stay at the three, at the four. He needs to go back to the three, and they want to keep Amari off the bench. J.R. Smith's got to find his rhythm again, and I think the team has got to find a flow. I mean, they've lost their flow offensively. And I think bringing in, you know, a nice veteran who played with Melo, played with Josh Smith, J.R. Smith, I think Kenyon Martin can definitely bang and be a live body with some fresh legs for a grueling stretch. The Knicks, out of the last 32 or now 31 games, you know, 18 of them are on the road. So let's see what happens, because that spanking at Indiana the other night was not pleasant. So, you know, hopefully tonight they can turn it around and get a W, you know.
Yeah, Indiana's a bad matchup for everybody in the East, including Miami. They're one of these teams that has size up front. They have size on the wing. And if they're playing well, they can give everybody a run for the money. So,
yeah.
The Knicks need
to
be
definitely.
Worried.
I mean, you got to like them.
The Knicks need to be worried. I mean, they are half a game ahead of Indiana and a game ahead of Brooklyn and 2.5 ahead of Chicago. So if the trend continues and Carmelo keeps getting beat up playing the four and the big men don't really get healthy, then the Knicks, who were nice, sitting nice and, you know, comfy at the number 2 seed, could fall all the way down to 5.
You know what the best non-trade was and maybe the best move? I think maybe the Lakers. I mean, the Clippers, you know, I don't know what they could have done, so maybe standing pat for them was okay. Hopefully the Bulls get back Rose. But I think the Lakers not panicking and keeping Howard and just seeing what happens, you know. I mean, yes, you could lose him, but that could put them under the cap maybe, or help them to get closer under the cap if he leaves. But I think I just think that this team's going to get it together. I think Houston, I don't think Utah and Portland will do it, but I think Houston and L.A. will be, whatever the order, the 7th and 8th spot in the West. I think they're going to make the playoffs. And the Knicks tonight, they're up at Toronto. So let's see, you know, how they do against Rudy Gay and Toronto. You know, Toronto, man, Toronto's like five.
They're doing well since Rudy Gay.
Yeah, they're
out
doing
here.
Good. They just lost to Memphis, sort of like a revenge game. But Memphis, Tony Allen was playing hard on Rudy Gay. They almost fought the other night. It was a battle, but they had run. Both the teams had won five in a row going into the game. So since they got Rudy Gay, they were 5-2. So 5-3.
They're 6-4 in their last 10. Toronto. And look, I like. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Especially people were trying to cherry pick Dwight Howard. You as a Laker, if you're going to move him, you got to move him for quality. You're not going to move him for just some has-beens and some wannabes and some. You know, this is a guy that you really need to have a heart-to-heart at the end of the season. Kobe, Dwight Howard, and Jerry Buss, and maybe throw Jeannie Buss in there. They have to go to Hawaii, and they need to just get away from it.
Hawaii is the place where everything is, you can work it out, talk it out.
Walla walla, you know, whatever they say in Hawaii, you know, it'll all be good. Sit around the beach, and you know, on Waikiki or whatever, and just the four of them, until this gets resolved, nobody leaves, you know. Just sit in a, you know, in a room on a beach, in a cabana, whatever. Just everybody sit there, bring the alcohol if you need it, bring the food, bring the luau, you know, whatever you need, just get it together. This is one of those things where you see history repeating itself, right? Kobe and Shaq could have stayed together. Had they stayed together, they probably would have won 2 to 3
more
championships together, right? Kobe ended up winning 2 on his own. Shaq won 1 with Dwayne Wade, but I think I have no doubt that together they would have won at least as many as Kobe won by himself, maybe more. And so Dwight has to realize that Kobe's difficult. Kobe's a pain. But
they need each other to win.
If you want to win a championship, there's no better location than right here in L.A. And the buses have to be willing to pay the luxury tax and pay all this stuff, and hopefully Pau Gasol's, you know, plantar fascia heals and whatever. But this team needs to stay together. So I agree with you 100% that Dwight Howard, even though they don't get along, look, I said it in the beginning of the year, Mike D'Antoni is not their coach for a long period of time. He's going to get fired, whether it's this year, whether it's next year, whether it's real soon. This oil and water situation can't continue in L.A., right? So they're going to find a new coach, and maybe that's
what they
need.
I think next season they bring Phil back. He comes back in the beginning of the season. I mean, you see, he's already sort of coaching through the media, you know, and that's what I like. I like about Phil. And now he finally got married to Jeannie, so he ain't going nowhere. And I think the brother will say, you know what, it's the right move. Let me just bring back Phil. Because Dwight's going to say, I will not stay if you got D'Antoni.
And it's funny because
happen.
Nobody hates D'Antoni. They just don't like the results. Apparently, everybody likes him. He's a likable guy. He's a player's coach. You know, he's fiery. People like him. At least he's fiery, you know, internally. He doesn't. He apparently avoids conflict, so he won't get in your face and scream.
Nah,
at you,
he doesn't hold guys accountable either, and that's what, you know, sort of got players upset with him in New York. So, listen, you know what's fascinating? I mean, forget the whole L.A. thing. I mean, it is what it is. We'll see how it plays itself out. But two teams that are going to lose players that I'm sort of shocked they didn't make any moves. And that's kind of weird. So if you're a Hawk fan, you're like, okay, Josh Smith will probably, Danny Ferry probably won't give him the max, so he probably won't come back. So that's weird. Why didn't you get something for him? Because they're
already
under the cap.
Yeah, I agree with that. Unlike Dwight Howard, who you wanted to keep and build your team around, Danny Ferry can't get rid of Josh Smith fast enough. So if you can't get rid of him fast enough, why wouldn't you trade him and get a piece, a draft pick,
get something? Get Humphries and Brooks. You know, if that was really offered by Brooklyn, I would have taken it.
But
and
he didn't want any part
Utah.
Of Humphries next year. He didn't want any part of Humphries' contract for next year.
Yeah,
still,
I get it.
Marshall,
I mean, it's only a 2-year deal, though, so it's only one more year. But then the same thing with Utah, right? Al Jefferson and Millsap are both coming off. So why not get something for them? If they both walk, I mean, they both could go together with Dallas and play with Nowitzki, or one go to Dallas, you know, maybe one of them goes to Cleveland. I don't know. I'm just sort of surprised by Utah. And maybe they're just like, hey, we're sort of in the seventh spot. Let's just try to make the playoffs. We'll keep this team. We'll get some playoff revenue. If I'm a fan, I got to be disappointed, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to do something. When you're stuck in that 8th seed, 9th seed, 10th seed, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, you feel like let's make errors of commission. Let's make trades, and if they don't work out, I can live with that rather than just sitting back and being at the, you know, barely making the playoffs and then probably getting swept in the first round by, you know, San Antonio or the Clippers or
who's to say they'll get a free agent, right? I mean, with whatever cap space that they free up, how do you know anyone's going to come to Utah next year? You know, that's also kind of would kind of piss me off as well, you know? They might not get anybody. So
you know who
I thought
did make a good trade is the Boston Celtics. It was a minor one, but getting Jordan Crawford for a hurt Leandro Barbosa, who you weren't going to get anything from, and doesn't really contribute Jason Collins, I thought,
I
don't know the salary cap implications, but at least you get a wing player that can play. So Jason Terry,
he could score.
Jason Terry was my preseason, you know, sixth man of the year. Has had a very disappointing year.
And Terry hasn't played great.
Yeah, so Terry and Lee are not giving them the production that they would want. So you bring in Jordan Crawford, you got another wing player, you got another athlete. I think that was a great trade for the Celtics. Look, they're not winning the championship, but this makes them competitive. They could win a round or two in the playoffs.
And they'll probably get ahead
depending
of Atlanta.
On the matchup.
I could see them moving up to all the way up to six. And then maybe first round playing against Brooklyn, the Knicks, or Indiana. So, you know, Boston's not going to be an easy out. They definitely won't be easy out. So you ready to hoop it up with the top 25, man? I mean, listen, this is a classic matchup, and this is the last time we're going to see Georgetown against Syracuse.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. The Big East, Syracuse is going to the ACC, for those who don't really know. But Georgetown at Syracuse. This is kind of huge, right? I mean, number 11 at number 8. It's
they're both 10-3 in the Big East. So that's probably, you know, the winner of this game is going to be the number 1 seed in the Big East tournament most likely. So not
right.
that matters. You still got to win it on the field.
Yeah,
I mean
yeah.
on the court.
They're still going to have to deal with Louisville and
yeah, but it's
Marquette.
A good matchup. It's a heck of a matchup. You know, Georgetown in the beginning of the year had a lot of trouble scoring. But as the year's gone by, they've kind of figured it out. Their defense is so good that they could keep the game in the 50s and still win. You know, Georgetown.
Yeah, but it will be hard against Syracuse. Syracuse seems to push it a little bit more. Sutherland's back. You know, our guy Carter Williams, you're not ready for him. I just think that Syracuse at home – crowd's going to be hyped, right? I mean, it's the last time they're seeing Georgetown. The Carrier Dome's going to be insane. I'd be shocked if Georgetown came in there and won this one. I really would. I really could see Syracuse putting it on them. You know, maybe a double-figure win. Well, it'll probably be close, but, you know, they'll pull away at the end and win by 6 or 7, I think.
No, I like Syracuse in double figures. You know what? I think it's a style. It's an issue of style, right? If Georgetown can keep the game in the 50s and low 60s, then they can win. They can win a game 62-60, but if that game gets to, you know, the 60s, mid-60s, 70s, then that's all Syracuse. And I think ultimately Georgetown just doesn't have enough offense. You know, Otto Porter's our boy, and Starks, you know, he can score a little bit. But other than that, that Georgetown team just can't put up points with Syracuse. They don't have the firepower. Syracuse is too tough. What's that?
You know, hey, listen, we might have to put him on our top five all sports names. Everybody needs to go to RayandTay.com and you'll see our top fives, and we have the top five sports names. And Otto Porter, he might have to be put on that list. Maybe we'll have to update and do a new list. But you know what's interesting? I thought Cal beating Oregon last night, maybe getting themselves in the tournament was a good win. But I got a game for you tonight. St. Louis, who's right outside the top 25, at number 15, Butler. This is an underrated matchup. This is going to be a great, great game. I might have to watch this one before I put in Lincoln.
I was gonna say, where are you fitting it in with the movie?
Nah, listen, this is 7 p.m. right? So that's 5 Eastern, right after Ray and Tay. I'm putting this on, and then some dinner, and then Lincoln. You know, that's how I'm gonna rock it, man.
All right,
come on, you know,
right,
St. Louis at Butler. That's real basketball right there.
No, that's legit. And you know, Butler, it's funny because two different expectations, right? Butler has two Final Fours in the last 3 years. They're trying to get a top four seed and show the committee that they're legit, and
yeah,
show
this is every
ESPN
year for them
and everybody that, you know, they had that game day hosted at Butler. So they're ready. You know, these guys want to definitely prove that they're no fluke. And so they'll be ready to play. And then St. Louis, right, like you said, trying to make it to the tournament. I mean, that's a big incentive in February.
But even the coach about the Brad Stevens was like, listen, he said St. Louis is probably one of the toughest teams they faced all season. You know?
Yeah, look,
so
they're 20-5, 9-2 in the A-10. I mean, this matchup, right, historically hasn't been an A-10 matchup, right? But
right,
now they're in the
new
same conference. And these two are fighting for, you know, best team in the Atlantic 10. So even though
kind of an underrated conference right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, even though St. Louis isn't ranked, I mean, they're one of the top, you
right
know, what is it, 38 at-large teams. So they're going to make, you know, they're going to make the tournament more, unless they go into a serious tailspin. They'll make
nah,
the tournament.
Nah, they're in.
But they definitely want to, you know, prove themselves worthy of a 7, you know, a 6-7.
Well, we got
5.
3 weeks left, baby. You ready? Listen,
oh,
Ray and Tay, March Madness is going to be hyped. So people better, you know, tune into our show. It's definitely going to be hyped. Woo! I'm excited. So what about some of these Saturday games? What are you
yeah,
thinking?
Yeah, so Saturday, we've got, obviously, Georgetown-Syracuse. We talked about
yeah
that. We don't have much else that's top 25, but
right, Miami, they're on the road. No big deal against Wake Forest. Seton Hall needs an upset at Louisville.
Right.
No,
Arkansas
like
and Florida. Florida's trying to avenge that loss a couple weeks ago at Arkansas. Speaking of avenging losses, TCU and Kansas again.
Right,
trying to avenge that horrible loss.
And number 13, Kansas State at Texas, which could be a trap game. I think Texas might have something. Texas might have something for them.
Okay,
oh, and then
you got
New Mexico. Number 16 and number
16, 22, right. New Mexico, Colorado State.
Colorado State, that's a good one.
Right, right.
That's
you got a Villanova
one
team that's scrapping and might make the tournament now that they're 17-10, 8-6 in the Big East. They're
they
got to
beat Marquette,
though,
at home. They, you're right. It's so funny. This is a you hate to say for a team it's a must-win, right? But this is it for Villanova. Unless they can win the Big East tournament, this game could put them in a tournament. You know, at large, when you're going up against, you know, other teams and they look at you as separate entities and not your conference, you need to beat a ranked team at home. They got to beat Marquette at home.
And there might be a little Big East backlash because in a season where the Big East is dominant, so let's say if Syracuse, Georgetown, and Louisville were all consistently excellent in top five teams, then you could say, all right, we could give the conference 8. Easily, maybe 9. But in a team where, in a year where the Big East is pretty decent, but clearly the Big Ten is the best.
It's number one
conference.
Yeah. But they
now
say, but listen,
saying,
I know where you're going, but they always say, Ray, that it's like, oh, we look at them as individuals, not the conference.
But you know
you
what?
Don't believe
here's
them
the thing. Well, it's not that I don't agree. It's that the selection committee changes every year. So it's not like even if you wanted to have a consistent philosophy, the actual people implementing the philosophy and voting changes every year. So who knows? You know, you're putting your fate into the hands of the selection committee. So you never know what will happen.
No, very true. So Sunday is when we got some tough matchups, right? Michigan State at number 18, Ohio State. That's going to be fun. Illinois, though, has got a shot to also, in the Big Ten, make the tournament, maybe if they can go and upset number 7, Michigan. And then our last chance for our Johnnies, number 20, Pitt, is at St. John. I want St. John's to win so bad. I'd love to see them make the tournament.
They're
and then Cincinnati
and
at number 25, Notre Dame. That's another good game.
That's a very good game. I mean, those are two sort of right at top 25.
Right,
teams,
Cincinnati's
right?
on the cusp of the top 25,
right.
So that's a good one. I'd like to see St. John's get a win in there. Obviously, you know, I'm definitely going to root for Michigan. I like that team. They're exciting. I would love Boston College to win at Duke, number 6 Duke, but they probably won't. And what do you think of Michigan State at Ohio State? That's sort of the marquee
game
of the weekend.
Michigan State, what a brutal schedule they have.
Oof.
I mean, they played Indiana, and now they turn around 3-4 days later and play Ohio State.
I think they're going to win, though. I think that Indiana game helped them, and I think they're going to go in Ohio State and smack up the Buckeyes. Don't you feel it, Izzo? And
I feel it.
Yeah,
Appling,
I think they're
going to
take their frustrations out on them. Yeah. And other than DeSean Thomas, again, Ohio State has
not enough scoring. You're right.
And Michigan State is going to put the clamp down D on them. And again, if Michigan State made some free throws and if Michigan State executed, they could have beaten the number one team in the nation at home. So they can think of the glass half full or the glass half empty. And I think Izzo will get them fired up. And I look for them to actually play very well in Columbus and beat Ohio State.
Yeah, that's going to be on CBS, so we'll get to see our boy Seth Davis, who was great on our show on Rain and Tate today, and, you know, hear him pre- and post-game and at the half. And, I'm definitely excited about it. And, you know, I just think the world of some of these coaches in the Big Ten. I mean, definitely, specifically, Bo Ryan at Wisconsin and Izzo at Michigan State. I see them, you know, when I make out my brackets, I can't see.
What do you think of Tom Crean? Is he breaking into that category with what he did at Marquette?
I'm kind of headed there. He was great at Marquette, very underrated, and I think he's doing a lot with his team. I think honestly, even Andy Cass said it, and I'm telling everybody, you heard it here first a couple of weeks ago. I've been talking about it for about a month and a half now. Victor Oladipo. I call him Victor. You know what? Like Jackie O, I'm going to call him Victor O. That's his new name for me, Victor O. Victor O is the player of the year, mark my words. Even Andy Katz is saying that, hey, you know, these guys are also being conformed because he does everything. He's outshining Zeller. He's the go-to guy. He scores, he rebounds, gets steals, the defense. He's sticking anybody on the perimeter he needs to. You know, he's the man, player of the year.
I don't disagree that he's the best player maybe all around in the country. I just think that, first of all, for the first half of the season, he split votes with Zeller, even on his own team. Zeller was thought of as a player of the year candidate. And second of all, his stats aren't going to be gaudy enough, so people are going to look at a Trey Burke, who leads the conference in assists, or they're going to look at a Doug McDermott with his scoring, or even a Mason Plumlee with his double-double.
4 points against my man Alex Lem. I poo-poo on Plumlee.
So think that the voters get caught up in the stats. But I hear what you're saying. Look, we haven't had a guy that contributes like that on both sides of the court, you know, that kind of small forward, two guard.
Dwayne Wade might have been the last one, you think?
Yeah, that type of game is rare, you know, and he stayed. He's
that
a
is,
junior.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, credit to him, he's going to graduate. He's going to graduate in 3 years.
You got to love that.
So that's a great story more than anything. You know, what an impressive story.
Right.
The guy could have, you know, drawn it out and take 1.5 classes and basket weaving. But he's graduated. So good for him.
And Indiana is a pretty decent, you know, school academically as well. So it's pretty impressive. And, you know, we always like to big up, you know, college athletes, but definitely ones who, you know, academically excel too. You know, Ray and Tay always like, stay in school, get that education. It's important. So why don't we talk about the sport we love so much that we miss? You know, maybe. How about this? I'm feeling some tunes. You know, I'm feeling the beat.
Yes. Give us a transition.
So, yeah, let's take a quick
transition
little break.
To the combine.
I'm going to transition you, and then we'll get to the NFL Combine. Ray and Tay, we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
here I come, hip hop's number one son. Or truth be told, I'm more like a younger brother. Cause I've been around since people thought Dana Dana, Slick Rick were brothers.
We're
come
back.
As you are.
And we're back.
That's what you got to do with the combine, Ray.
NFL.
Come as you are.
Well, don't come as you are. Come as the NFL scouts want to see you, you know, because this is the
right,
biggest
chance. Right, but you got to be yourself.
No, you definitely have to be yourself, but there's certainly a formula that if you follow the formula, you can do the hocus pocus act and poof, you know, magically either forget about all of your tape or enhance all of your tape, and suddenly you become this new magical athlete that you weren't last week. So in some ways, I love the combine because all
but a lot of GMs, they keep it real. Even Charlie Cashley, you know, shout out to him and NFL Network. He said, look, it was another piece to the puzzle, but we always looked at the tape. It was just good to interview them, ask them some questions, and, you know, we want to see their measurables in terms of their speed, their height, their weight, see what's real. He's like, but the tape always came first, what you did for four years.
But you always have these Trev Alberts of the world and these, you know, Mike Mamoulas and these workout
warriors Mike Mamoula,
that run the, you know, have a great combine, shoot up the first round, and then are disappointing. And if they didn't have the combine
and had
him on his tape, then you would have drafted him lower. But anyway, it is what it is, right? It's a lot of money you're putting into 20, 21, 22-year-old kids. So the more data, the better, I suppose. So why not? Let's get into it. Let's get into the
combine.
Let
me ask you, number one, that's where it starts. Do you go with the lineman from Texas A&M, my man, what's his name, Luke Jokel, or Geno Smith, if
Luke
you're
Jokel.
The Chiefs?
Luke Jokel.
Do you develop... Because it's not a financial hit, right? It's not that big of
a
deal. We're not paying $100 million.
Yeah.
Do you say, I'm Andy Reid. I can maybe sign a veteran or, you know, maybe I can see what's up with, you know, Castle or, you know, whatever his plan is, right? Maybe I get Matt Flynn. But do I draft a Geno Smith and say, you know what, I can do something with this guy and I could develop him or Matt Barkley?
So
it could be a shocker, but
Matt Barkley to me is not even a first rounder. So if you're Kansas City, you might take him in the second round. Maybe that's the way to go. Big Luke from A&M in the first round, and then Matt Barkley in the second round. But
or Landry Jones.
You're right that it's not speaking of DeMarcus Russell. It's not a guaranteed $39 million or you know, $50 million that they got
and
up
these
to.
These GMs are so happy about that, right?
Oh, absolutely. And the players are too, right? They said, why is a kid who's never played a down going to make more than a five-year veteran who's made a Pro Bowl or two?
Was Sam Bradford, I believe, was he the last guy? Do you remember?
He was
the
last
guy
to
get
50.
Yeah.
He got 50
to get that big
guaranteed
deal. And no disrespect to him. He still hasn't lived up to it yet, if we're being honest.
No, he hasn't. He's a solid quarterback, but he's certainly not worth $50 million guaranteed. But, no, I take the lineman. You know what? Unless you have a pretty good feeling that Geno Smith or any other quarterback is going to be, you know, special, you build in the trenches and feel like you can never go wrong, especially the last several years where if you think about – I mean, there have been some busts, right, on the offensive line, but there have also been some really, really solid Joe Thomas, Jake Long. I mean, there have been some guys that you really anchor your team around, even the Jets, the Brickishaw, Ferguson. I mean, I go with the offensive linemen. Unless it's – and we got spoiled last year, right, with a draft that had the Luck and RG3 who were – you know, it's never a sure thing, but Luck was very close to a sure thing. RG3
that's
was
a once-in-a-lifetime type of class.
That's a once-in-a-lifetime draft,
yeah.
Right. Especially
I mean, maybe 04 and 83, we talked about that. You know, it's so rare. It's really rare. So then we sort of agree, the Chiefs, you know, I kind of feel the same way with that, probably going to lineman. So number two, you're the Jaguars. You know, their GM, he came out and said, you know, he wants to look at kids from big schools. Nothing wrong with that. You know, he likes the pedigree, probably even the SEC. Do you think maybe they go for the number one rated linebacker, Jarvis Jones?
Well, Jarvis has that medical issue that they need to, because he transferred because of that. So they need to clear him medically. And you'd hate to have a medical issue with somebody you're taking number two overall. And that's why a lot of mock drafts have Werner, the defensive end from Florida State, coming out here.
Right.
So I don't know. Jarvis Jones, I mean, he did big work at Georgia. But, again, I'm scared of anybody that has medical issues. So I don't know. Maybe he falls a little bit because of that.
You think so? I think sometimes that's – if a guy's cleared, right, that's where I think people get too panicky, you know, because nowadays we've talked about it, not just Adrian Peterson. Plenty of athletes have come back from all types of surgeries and, you know, don't get re-injured and are extremely healthy and, you know, do a great job for the rest of their careers. So, you know, when I watched Georgia play, the kid was all over the field. You know, that's the one thing I can say. Definitely played well in the Bama game, you know, sort of opposite, right, of Manti Te'o. Georgia gave Bama all they could handle. You know, they really gave him all they could handle.
Yeah,
so
Ogletree and Jones were a heck of a linebacking combo. And,
you know,
they're both probably in and around the top 10, maybe top 15. But that's a nice little – I want to see them both succeed.
Yeah. So, look, obviously we know, you know, rest in peace to Al Davis, but it seems like there's just a lack of talent for so many years that, you know, just was not – the draft did not run right. So they're rebuilding their whole, you know, depth, everything. The Raiders need a lot. I mean, you could go defensive tackle, the big kid out of Utah. You could go lineman. You know, they always like speed, but, you know, I don't think you'd take a receiver here. How about a running back? Is it just too early? Do you say, okay, we got to get big guys, beefy guys, and take care of the defensive tackle or maybe the defensive line?
Yeah, I think it's too early. Plus, if you're honest with yourself, unless you think there's a Trent Richardson or an Adrian Peterson coming out, you have yourself a heck of a back if he can stay healthy. Oh, and by the way, Marcel Reese is quite a nice little
he's proven,
you know,
to be something
fullback
else,
slash running back. So that combination. Is
it too early, you think, for Milner? Maybe D. Milner. Some people project him at 6 or 7, maybe 6 going to Cleveland. But maybe the Raiders, their secondary is really bad.
Yeah.
You know, and if the kid from Florida State is gone, if Werner's gone, I'd take a shot at D. Milner.
Well, I think they do need to do something on defense. Yeah, why not? Look, at that point, 2 or 3 slots, don't even worry about that. I mean, if you project
right
him to go 6 and you're taking him at
3, since
Nnamdi's
been gone,
your guy, take him.
And since Nnamdi's been gone, their secondary hasn't been that great. And not like Nnamdi's played great in Philly, but their secondary has dropped off.
Nnamdi's going to get cut or going to be asked to restructure his contract because he's
– I think they're going
to cut
him.
I don't know why, but Nnamdi was able to talk the NFL execs into thinking that he's the best cornerback in the NFL and that he's worth – you know, $12 to $15 million a year.
Do you
so
think
Al
he
Davis
can move to safety?
He's not bad.
That's what I see with him.
But he was the complete
really
package because he played, you know, played the run. He played bump and run. He's a physical. I don't know that he can hit like a safety, though. So
really?
I think he's a corner. I just don't think he's a top 5 corner. I just think he's a, you know, an above average corner.
He was
corner
looking pretty bad at corner to me. He was getting embarrassed. I don't know. That was some of the worst. Oof, I feel bad. Definitely feel bad. So we'll see what happens with the Raiders. Now, number 4, it's a whole new regime. We know what Chip Kelly is, you know, about. The Eagles, obviously, if Luke Jokel drops, they would snatch him in a minute. If not, they could use secondary help. They could take a D. Milner early. You know, maybe they get the D tackle from Utah. I kind of think Philly, they've got to decide philosophy-wise, you know, really what are they doing and who are they? Because, yeah, Peters will come back from injury, but they still need offensive linemen.
That's to what I think. In his system, in Coach Kelly's system, they need offensive linemen, and they need flexible offensive linemen. So
right.
I don't know if they see that in this draft with Chance Womack from Alabama, and obviously if Joe
right,
Bosa,
the guard,
they
yeah.
take him. But they need to protect that quarterback. That quarterback is going to get exposed, apparently, in Chip Kelly's, you know, freewheeling, whatever you're going to call it, open, you know, fluid offensive system. So to me, I wouldn't be surprised if they went with an offensive lineman. Maybe not in the
right.
first round, but certainly top two or three rounds. They need to get some. They need to rejuvenate that offensive line. They also need help on the other side of the football.
Yeah,
the
defensive end. Maybe they go get more from Texas A&M. You know, that's a
yeah.
possibility. You know,
I
like him.
Utah.
Right, the big guy from Utah. I mean, I don't know if they need a tackle or an end. You know, I just think. I don't like their linebackers. I don't think the Matthews kid has ever really stepped up. You know, they had some injuries, but you know what I think? I think he's done so well in the Senior Bowl and the practices. My man, Eric Fisher from Central Michigan, I think they're going to take him. I think he's going to jump up. Some people have him projected anywhere from, you know, 10 to 13. I think Eric Fisher, they're going to take him. He could be a right
wow.
tackle. I think they're going to wind up taking him because you know what it is? They really have got to solidify that line. And I just, you know, I don't know if they're going to do it with a guard this early. So to me, I think this Fisher kid, he could be great.
Or maybe you trade down and try and get somebody else who's just chomping at the bit for a Jarvis Jones or maybe a Geno Smith if he goes that high, even though you and I both don't like him that high. Yeah, that's interesting. And then right after them, so let's just go through the next set
right.
of teams. So we've got Detroit, Cleveland, and Arizona picking 5, 6, 7. So really three teams that are, you know, in total, I don't want to say total disarray, but you know, totally different situations though, right? Detroit had huge expectations for this year and talk about under-delivering. Cleveland looks like a team on the rise,
yeah.
and Arizona looks like a team on the decline, except for that defense. And
they could be on the rise, a lot of talent.
On defense.
They got the right coach. They just need a quarterback. I like the young running backs, and I love Floyd with Fitzgerald and our guy Roberts, Andre Roberts.
They could use offensive line and a quarterback, though, but that's a premium that everybody in the league wants, right?
Well,
so,
how about they get the Womack kid? I see him projected there for a lot of, you know, drafts. I could see him being really solid. They're going to get back a Levi Brown. Maybe they sign a free agent, and then they figure out what they're going to do with quarterback. But I'll tell you this, Bruce Arians will develop whatever, you know. And maybe they bring back who played the last two games, Brian Hoyer. I heard him on SiriusXM the other day, and I think Brian Hoyer has got talent. He might go back to Pittsburgh, but, you know, if he stays with the Cardinals, maybe, you know, they give him a shot.
Let me ask you something. If Geno Smith and Matt Barkley are available,
do the Cardinals take a chance?
Do you take a chance on one of them?
I think it depends on what Bruce Arians sees in him. But, yeah, I might take a chance on Geno Smith at that pick.
See, I wouldn't. I just don't think either of them project to be.
It depends on free agency, right? If you can sign an offensive lineman or two, then yes. If not, then you go ahead and get you a nice offensive lineman that you feel that you could plug right in, you know.
What do you
think
about those Browns? The Browns look like,
well,
you know, they're a team that could use, you know, a defensive player maybe. I mean, they need an offensive.
They need a receiver. How about the receiver
offense.
Out of Cal?
Yeah, the kid out of Tennessee, you know, they need a playmaker, but they've needed this for 5 years. So for some reason, they have a hesitance to bring or trade.
It's sort of
or,
like the Bears, right? Never getting receivers for Jay Cutler.
Is it like the diva effect? They don't want a diva on their team? I mean, what's the
but
deal? Get a playmaker.
That's the kid, Keenan Allen. Some people have him projected 12 at the Dolphins. but he's sort of the number one receiver. You know, most people are saying him, and then the kid from Tennessee. I could see them, you know, taking a shot, or the Jets taking a shot at him. Yeah. So, and then we have.
Yeah. What do
you think
about the last three teams? So the Bills, the Jets, and the Titans, real quick, before we go to our next segment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the Titans need to go defense. They would love to get Banks, the cornerback, or Milner. You know, the guy from Mississippi State, Banks. He's tough. I could see the Jets. They need so much. Oh my gosh, the defensive end from Oregon. Maybe Jarvis Jones drops down if they're lucky. Maybe a receiver. Would you take a quarterback for the Jets? Would you go with Geno Smith for competition outdo? He's probably better than Sanchez.
Top 10 pick needs to start. To me, unless he's a quarterback of the future, right, your top 10 pick needs to start.
Right,
and
so Sanchez has a year
nine.
Or two left, right, on his deal?
Yeah, and the Jets have the number nine pick.
So why not take Geno? If you believe in him, why not take him? Groom him along. He doesn't have to play the first year. We'll see. And the Bills, I think they're going to go, you know, defense. Obviously, they released a whole bunch of defensive players. McGee, the linebacker, you know, they got rid of like four or five guys. So did the Jets defensively. So I could see the Bills going defense. So it's going to be great, and we'll talk more about it. You know, obviously check out the combine. We'll talk about that on Monday and sort of review it, and we'll look to see how these guys do at the combine and watch the NFL Network closely. But let's get into it, man. Let's talk about, obviously, you know, Black History Month, and, you know, I think we should just talk about American history. I think we need to just honor people, period, and not even get into everything like that with the race and this and that. But it is Black History Month, and I think it's a good time for people to understand just what African-American athletes did, not just in sports, but in society, sort of changed the world for all mankind. And so let's look at our list. I mean, we talked about five different people. We sort of, you know, came to our five. You want to work your way backwards?
Yeah, sure. Let's go number five. So we have a tie. And if you're too young, go back into history books and read about these two. So we've got a male and a female athlete. So we got Wilma Rudolph of Olympic greatness in the 40s. In the 60s.
50s,
and then
yeah.
We've got Bill Russell, who played in the same era in the NBA.
Yeah.
And let me tell you a little 50s, bit about Wilma 60s, Rudolph.
Yeah.
So she won three gold medals in the Olympics, and she was, you know, quite an athlete and really a groundbreaker, not only for women, but certainly for African-American women. So in the 1960 Olympics, won her three gold medals in the 100-meter, 200-meter, and 4x100-meter. So not only that, but she was, inducted into the National Track and Field Hall of Fame and, you know, unbelievable athlete, groundbreaking athlete, in a time when not only was there, you know, discrimination against African Americans, but also, you know, sex
definitely
discrimination
against women.
Well,
Well, I think she's incredible, and I think a lot of women, period, looked up to her. But when you talk about someone like Bill Russell, who was around the same time in '56, he got a gold medal in the Olympics. Bill Russell is not only probably one of the greatest winners in sports history, and won 11 titles. Two as a player coach, but he was the first coach, African American coach, in sports history in 1963, and sort of, you know, changed the way for, you know, Red Auerbach just said, he was like, look, I couldn't even think of anybody else to coach the Celtics after, you know, he retired and sort of transitioned into being the head of the Celtics and being a general manager. Bill Russell, I think, was so great because also he, you know, obviously born in 1934, and he was born in a time where, you know, there was so much going on racially, but he stood with Ali when he protested against the Vietnam War. And Bill Russell also boycotted, he told a story in a Bill Simmons interview, they boycotted playing a game in Kentucky because in Kentucky they would not feed Casey Jones at a restaurant. So they said, we're not going to play. And what's so great is that him, Jerry West, Oscar Robinson, they're the ones that got the NBA Players Union going because they boycotted, they were going to boycott the NBA All-Star Game in 63, and it was the first time that it was going to be televised on ABC. So they told them, you know, it was a big snowstorm, and they were like, you know, hey, we're not going to, the NBA owners were like, oh, we'll meet with you next year. They're like, no, you won't. You have to meet with us now. We got to get this players union. And they were like, okay, great, play in a game, and then we'll give you the union. And that's how it started. So they did that for all sports. So Bill Russell, man, he did a lot for athletes today in all sports, but also I think did a lot of being, you know, just a trailblazer. And in Boston, where they kind of, you know, they never really accepted black athletes. You know, even when he was coaching and winning all these titles, they were like, they didn't want him as a coach, you know, which sort of had him bitter for years. And I don't want to say bitter, but he was just like, you know, you don't like me, I don't like you. So kudos to Russell and Wilma Rudolph. Hey, you know, before we go to number four, I just want to give a shout out to Arthur Ashe in tennis. Obviously, a great, we couldn't name them all, right? Ernie Davis, a great college football player, first African-American to win the Heisman at Syracuse. So who you got at number four, man?
So number four, we've got Jim Brown. And first on the field, he was unbelievable. I mean, the guy was a athlete. He was the athlete's athlete. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. Just to tell you, he was inducted into the college football, pro football, and the lacrosse Hall of Fame.
It's incredible.
This guy was unbelievable. Grew up on Long Island, went to Syracuse, did big things at Syracuse, and, you know, people look at him as one of the best running backs and one of the best players of all time. And
yeah,
people don't
second best player
of
all time, he was voted.
That he excelled in, you know, basketball, track, and lacrosse in addition to football. So after that, so after his playing career, which he ended pretty short, right? He didn't run for you know, like Barry Sanders, you know, he kind of ended his career early. He went out and made 30 films, and
yeah,
over 30 films. So he was known as the first black action star. And
yeah, did a lot of westerns
and black exploitation
films. Yeah, he was great.
He started working with you know, youth and kind of economic development in the inner city. So read up on Jim Brown. Jim Brown did a lot of things, you know, way beyond his days as a, you know, as an athlete.
And he's helped stop gang violence in California. That's what
yep.
I think is very impressive that he's done.
Cleveland,
and
let's not
forget this: 6.2 yards a carry, Ray. Wow.
Unbelievable. Yeah, 6.2 yards a carry. Oof, as a yeah. In college, he was unbelievable, and in his pro career, he averaged 5 yards a carry. 5 yards a carry, that's unbelievable. That's 5.2
yeah, carries, you get a first down.
In the NFL. Yeah.
So who we got at number three, man?
Yeah, so let's keep it moving. Number three, oof, this guy.
One of the greatest.
One of the greatest, really. Could be number one if it
yeah.
weren't for, you know, all the racial boundaries, the barriers that we had in the U.S. But the guy, Jesse Owens, so went out and had the Olympic Games that really changed the way, you know, people looked at the black athlete and really took it to Berlin and the
yeah,
whole Aryan ideals of yeah. the, you know, the German, you know, Aryan racist ideals that coming out of the Nazi Party and the propaganda that was starting in the mid, you know, mid-30s. So he just went out there and just dispelled all those myths and just had what a performance he had, what pressure and how he delivered in the 100 meters, the 200 meters, the 4x1, and the long jump. So he really showed, and on enemy turf too, right? It's not like these games
yeah.
were being held in L.A. So he
yeah,
was
and he represented America well, man, Jesse Owens. So number two, we got Muhammad Ali. I mean, there's not much to say. Everybody knows about him. I think one of the greatest things, obviously, you know, Golden Glove titles. He, you know, did all he did with the Vietnam War. People didn't like Ali, a lot of people in this country at the time. But as history has gone on, he's sort of revered as one of the greatest athletes ever. I mean, 56-5 in his career. with 37 KOs, but, you know, just a humanitarian, a political figure, you got to love Muhammad Ali. He's the champ. He's the greatest. And, you know,
right. And, but the number one of all time has to be Jackie Robinson. I mean, think about it. It's America's sport, America's pastime. I mean, the NFL has passed it in the last 10 or 15 years, but this was America's pastime, baseball. And baseball was all about, you know, America, Americana, take me out to the ball game. And Jackie Robinson was the first one to break the color barrier, and Branch Rickey, obviously, from the Dodgers signing him. But think about how much stress and pressure and scrutiny was on him. I mean, thank goodness we didn't have social media back then. And thank goodness that everything...
And he wasn't even the best baseball player from the Negro Leagues, but they knew that Jackie, a military guy and all that, that Jackie could handle it, that he could be sort of, you know, the olive branch to take the spitting, the hatred, the prejudice, everything. And he took it.
Yeah,
he
so what
he
a
really
person.
Killed him, now, man.
Yeah. Died early, you know, didn't live to see all of what he put in and all of the changes that have happened since, and how the African-American athlete and how, in general, race has changed in, you know, in the last 35, 40 years since he's been, you know, since he's been gone. But, yeah, Jackie Robinson, unbelievable. So in this Black History Month,
42 is retired forever in Major League Baseball.
Exactly, number 42. Other than Mariano Rivera, everybody in baseball has 42 retired. And once Mariano leaves, no other baseball player will ever wear the number 42 again. So, unbelievable.
What else could you say? So, listen, we had a great show, and, you know, we'll have this top five up on our site. So go to rayandtaytoday.com and check out all of our top fives. We'll have one for you on Monday. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks for listening. And thanks for talking sports with friends.
We're out.
Rayandtaytoday. Peace.